Welcome to the Conversations Podcast. We are kicking off a new series called Songs of Ascent, looking at Psalms 120 through 134. And I'm joined by two special guests and friends who happen to know each other fairly well. First, we're joined by lead pastor Jose Abaroa.
Good morning, Taylor.
Jose, good to have you back. And someone, it's been a while, Taylor, since you've been on the podcast, but Taylor Abaroa is with us this morning. Taylor, welcome back to the podcast.
Always good to be here.
Taylor Squared in the house.
That's right. That's right. Well, Jose, you are kicking off a new series. I personally would love to know what led you to picking this series itself and just the timing of it in the summer, and would love to hear what God taught you as you're preparing for this
week. A lot of different variables went into every time a lot of different variables go into picking a series. One thing is I do like going into the Old Testament. I think it's always great to hearken back to the Old Testament and see how it's still very much inspired and useful. And the Psalms are really amazing because they open up the whole spectrum of human emotion. So you find it all there. And for me, sometimes I need to remember that God's okay when I'm not okay, that God wants my frustrations, He wants my stress. And these songs of ascent are very, 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 very special because they are songs that were sung by pilgrims on the way to Jerusalem, going to one of the three annual festivals. And a lot of traveling is going on in the summer too. So that also coincided, right? We are on road trips a lot. We're at airports. Again, that's a stereotype. Not everybody travels, but this idea that we can bring God wherever we are. And when we go to church, we don't go to church to worship, but we should worship on our way to wherever we're going, even church. And that's what these pilgrims were doing. They're worshiping on their way to the temple. And in each psalm, there's incredible truth.
Incredible truth and incredible vulnerability that they're just letting God have it. Something you shared earlier was just the idea that it's okay to not all be okay, to come before God. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, whether they're early in their walk or even just throughout their walk with Jesus, can sometimes feel like they have to get right, quote unquote, get right with God before they can approach Him, or even just coming to church. So I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts on just the significance, starting at that theme itself, that God wants us, wants all of us to come before Him, regardless of how we feel like we've kind of put ourselves together to get there.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think that at a degree, we can all be that way with God. Taylor, I remember when you spoke on Sunday morning a few weeks ago, you talked about those non-negotiables and how God could have everything but those non-negotiables. And I think it is common that we do the same thing with God on the way somewhere. It's like, okay, God, I'll give you this, but I'm going to hold on to this one or two or three or 20 things. And I love how through song, the psalmists teach us that we can cry out to God. We can call upon God no matter where we are in that season. And even the significance of calling out to God with those things that maybe we are holding on to, or what you called non-negotiables.
Why do y'all think it can be hard? I mean, I put myself in this category sometimes. Why do we think it be hard to be vulnerable even with God itself? I mean, we're not even talking about other people at this exact moment, but just even God itself. Why do y'all think that is a struggle for us sometimes?
Yeah, we want to prove to God that we are faithful. We want to show Him that we're strong. And the verse in verse 176 in Psalm 119 really, really spoke to me. And again, it's the verse right before 120. And so that's how I got there. And the psalmist is saying, I have wandered away like a lost sheep. Come and find me, for I have not forgotten your commands. So there's this dichotomy of, I haven't forgotten your commands, yet the psalmist has wandered away like a lost sheep. So the psalmist is vulnerably acknowledging that they don't know where to go. And then they say, God, come and find me. So that confidence to know that God is the one who seeks after us, I think helps me be more vulnerable with God and not have, you know, pretense. The other thing too that this helps us is in our marriage, it protects us from trying to solve and be all things for the other. So we want to go to God first before we want to come to one another. Sometimes we put the pressure on other people that really belongs to God. And so I'll be really vulnerable with Taylor. And the question is, am I being that vulnerable with God? Does God know my real thoughts about X, Y, or Z? And this psalmist in 120 really does a great job. All right, God, these people are liars. These people are coming after me. They're for war. I'm for peace. Help me. I mean, he's being very honest. And, you know, I want to be that honest with God as well.
I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts on the significance of being a church, collective church, whether it's in a community group, whether it's just as a church at large, of being people who care and listen when people are under stress. Because I think there's even some times in our relationship with other believers where we want to make it seem like we have it all together to God, but also have it all together to other people. And so when we get approached by people that, you know, are in distress, sometimes there's a challenge there of how we're going to respond to that. And so what is so significant about being a collective group of people as a body to be able to respond and care?
I think in our Western culture, that's a really hard concept for us to understand. I think if we looked at a lot of different cultures, that may be more culturally normative, where cultures are used to having a more collective, it takes a village type of mentality. And where we live and the day and age that we live, and I think accessibility to information is a part of that, we tend to be more individualistic. And there's some strengths that come with that. But when it comes to the nitty-gritty of life, the hard, the valleys, oftentimes the joys of life too, it's easier for us to fall into those individual ways of I have to do this myself on my own and leaning to self-reliance rather than looking around and receiving help or support from the people around us.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I think this happens also in our car when we're trying to figure out what music to play on our playlist when we go from A to B, where there are some days where everyone's on the same page, and then there's other days that I'm getting to a point here where we can't agree on what to listen to in the car. And a lot of that has to do with our kids are growing up in a world where they know they have a lot of options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas before for me, whatever CD was in the car, that's what we were listening mm-hmm. to, or whatever the radio played, that's what we listened to. And so I do think that this added stress of choosing from a bunch of different resources adds to stress. Mm-hmm. It adds to our distress of, you know, figuring out how to do life. Whereas for a long time, we just didn't have that many options and therefore less stress in many ways.
Yeah. Let's get into the actual kind of content itself of the chapter. And I think some of the outline, Jose, that you followed in your message on Sunday was just simply starting with this idea that the psalmist is coming with their stress and is revealing that and knowing and not mincing words to describe kind of the anguish or the stress that they're in. And I think you asked us, okay, what is maybe causing us stress? And I think that may be slightly easier question sometimes to answer, but something that I know we've talked about before is just even asking about what your stress level is, or kind of how do you kind of you just personally, as well as just coaching people, discern kind of how you navigate when you're in the stressful moments, how do you respond? Because I think there's a lot of times, even cultural, where we can either take this and suppress all the stress and try to cope, as Jose, that you talked about, there's different ways of doing that. But then also there's ways where we can just let the stress consume us and we just become, you know, victims to the stress and the world around us. And so how do you balance just a healthy way of at first acknowledging what is stressing me out and what are the effects of that on me? And then we can talk about how you respond to that.
Yeah, I think as a therapist, I think about this from more of an assessment perspective, is no matter what someone is coming in to therapy for or what they're hoping to gain or work towards, there's a phase early on of, okay, what is going on here? What's the assessment of what that person is experiencing, what they have experienced, and where are they at? And that can look a variety of ways, but you're trying to really gain understanding of where that person or people are. And I think our world does move fast and our lives are full and they are busy. And so if we don't take that marker to pause and just do some self-assessment over what's happening in our lives, we're going to be swept up in the waves or in the undercurrent of what's around us. And, you know, to your point, so we need to know what is the stress. We need to identify that. And it's also good to put a marker on there of what is the stress level of that, because that's a way we scale our stress. So is this level 1 or 2 problem? Are we making it a 9 or a 10 when really it's a 1 or a 2? Or are we calling something a 1 or a 2, but really it's more like an 8 or 9? And that's a first step of then knowing, what do we do with that?
Yeah. And do you think that some people tend to fall either on one end of the spectrum or the other, where there are some people that do not identify their 9 or 10 and always suppress and always say, I'm fine. And then there's others that probably are 1 or a 2, but make everything a 9 or a 10?
Yes, absolutely. I think we all most likely have a lean towards one way or the other. And so doing that work inside of, okay, am I someone who magnifies the stress where it's a 1 or a 2, but I'm reacting like it's an 8, 9, or 10 to every stressor that comes my way. When I'm thinking of a 1 or a 2, I'm thinking of something like losing your keys in your house, or
traffic,
or forgetting a book that you need for your class. You know, that's probably a 1 or a 2 level stress. And when thinking 8, 9, or 10, thinking more along the lines of a fragmented relationship or some deep wound or shame that's going on in a person's life, the loss of a loved one. And so to answer your question, I do think we all naturally have a lean, and what a great skill as believers to practice knowing where we're at so that then we call upon God no matter where we are on that scale.
One more thing on that that I find really interesting is sometimes when I'm in that 1 or 2 stress, but I'm reacting in a 9 or 10, that's a good indicator for me that there's some deeper stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I can easily ignore it, or my favorite tool, blame other people.
That's a common one.
You know, or just say, you, others, you know, all of you are not helping. But that's a good indicator that there's something deeper going on that I'm not aware of. So doing some deeper work, and Taylor, you and I see this often when we've learned over the years how to have really healthy conflicts. We're still working on it, but call a little deal a little deal and not allow that to escalate. Or one of our favorite things to do, and you've led this really, really well, is, because I love to talk things to death, put a pause and say, hey, we're done talking. Let's do a timeout, and then let's reconvene in a couple of hours or the next day.
Yeah, taking a pause or a timeout or a break is a great tool in a marriage relationship and parenting relationships, even in friendships or other external relationships, where sometimes we just need to take a pause. We need to take a deep breath. We need to go to God. And then how we come to a resolution is going to be a lot healthier and likely less full of sin than if we're reactive and in that moment.
No, seriously, I think about, there's probably a more technical term, Taylor, you could help me with, but I think about, I've used this before in talking to our community group about like spiraling, where I can just quickly get in my head and just like thinking about things, and it stays in there. And if I'm not putting a pause, if I'm not intentional about it, it'll just, you know, as the kids say, live rent free in my head. So there goes that. What about something that I think is also important here, of taking inventory of the sources of our stress? I know in this world we will have trouble, but also I know if you turn on the news or social media, like there's just a lot of things that I personally have felt convicted that I subject myself to stress that doesn't really involve me. It's important to stay in the loop. I get that balance, but there's also things that, like, knowing I'm going to open this app is going to give me more stress, or knowing that I'm about to watch this is going to give me more stress. So what's the value of just, like on this podcast, we can get practical and just talk about these things, but what value do y'all see in just even being intentional about what you're opening yourself up to? It could be someone else too, a relationship or something like that, that you're allowing to bring in stress to your life.
Yeah, I actually had this thought this morning, so love that you're asking this and love that we're talking about this. The most repeated phrase in the Bible is what? Come on. The most repeated.
Don't be afraid.
Thank you. Do not be afraid. So there's a difference between being informed and being afraid. And I think when fear starts creeping in, that's when you set the boundary of saying, nope, I'm not allowing this fear to hit me. I'm not going to subject myself to the enemy's agenda or to this other person's. Maybe this is real. Maybe you're in a relationship or in a circumstance where you're dealing with someone that wants to intimidate and wants to be superior. I mean, the psalmist is calling out liars and deceitful, you know, I mean, he's calling them bad names, right? These, I didn't want to go this far on the message, but we'll go a little deeper. And these are perhaps cuss words. Like he's calling them out, but he's venting to God and he's telling God, please deal with them. Please help me with them. So he's taking that seriously. He's not coming under fear or allowing that to dictate his life. After all, where is he going? He's going to worship God. So again, he's on this journey, and I think we find ourselves on a journey daily. And the question is, are we going to allow fear to overwhelm us, or is there a way for us to be informed and not fall prey to fear?
I think that's a great point, Jose, on the fear and how quickly that fear can start to dictate our behaviors, our actions, our thought processes. And, you know, I also think of it along the lines of discipline. And I think there are seasons where, using your example of media apps, mm-hmm. we're not saying all apps are bad or anything like that. But
some are really bad.
But there is a time to use discipline with those things. And I think of a spiritual discipline of fasting. And while that's pertaining to food, there's appropriate levels of taking a break from media, from what we're absorbing unto the Lord. I think that's a key part in receiving from God what He has for us, rather than just consuming the emotional weight, stress, and things that feeds our nervous systems to the point where we can become addicted to that emotional stress as a coping mechanism. And so calling a pause and giving that unto God in a way of spiritual discipline can be really, really helpful.
Yeah. I think something we talk about often on the podcast is the value of community, but this can also be a double-edged sword here, because community itself can be where y'all are spiraling or giving that fear, or just like really entering into that together and feeding that, whether that's through gossip or just, you know, comparing the what-ifs or the worst-case scenarios. And so even taking a pause, even being disciplined, having self-control in a group setting sometimes is something. I love, Jose, what you shared about y'all's marriage and the model of going to God first. A cheesy phrase still has stuck with me in college is a leader that once told me, like, go to the throne before the phone. And just
that's a good one.
I haven't used it in a while, but just thought of that, because it is so easy to call up a friend. It is so easy to mention to someone close to you just all the, you know, this person did this, or this is causing me issues or stress or struggles or fear. And so I think part of that is also, if you're on the receiving end of that, being able to pivot and point to truth. And being like, okay, what do we know is true? And I'm thankful because y'all have done that in my life. I have other friends in my life that have done that as well. Just people that, when I can get so worked up about something or so fearful of something, to have people that are continually pointing people back to that. As we continue on in this passage here, and we just look at kind of the part about there's different ways of coping, kind of what we were just talking about. There's different ways that we can address that, but going and calling before God and then knowing the truth that He does answer.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I think that's so true. And Jose, the question that you tagged on here that is powerful for us just to think about just in this whole message is, do I believe this?
Yep.
And because I think that's the second, as if it's not hard enough to go through these first few steps here, but also just do we really believe him? And so I'd love for y'all just to, someone that's maybe wrestling with that, that's having a hard time saying yes to that question, how would you encourage someone that's in that particular spot right now?
Yeah, I think the call, let me tackle that first quickly, because we talked about a lot of different coping mechanisms, people, phones, news, substances are on there too. I think being aware, and I love how science is catching up to what the Bible has said all along, that these are ways that are manipulating chemical reactions in our brains and in our bodies to try to get us back to a sense of peace. So drugs either stimulate or either depress our mind. And, when Jesus or Paul says in Romans 12, be transformed by the renewing of your minds. So either you're conforming to the patterns of this world, or you're being transformed into becoming more like Jesus. So faith, calling on the Lord, has a positive impact on our brains and does something that's way more long lasting. And here's my favorite part. It's free. You don't need a doctor consult. counseling is amazing. Obviously, I believe in counseling and the work, Taylor, that you're doing and the work that my counselor has done for me. But all of it should be leading us back to this powerful reality that we have a God who wants us to call onto Him. And when we call onto Him, yes, He answers. I'm going to get to that. But also, He rewires our brains.
Yeah, let me add something quickly. When I was doing my graduate studies, I read this really intriguing research on brain scans of when people are worshiping and when people are praying and what the brain does during those times. And this was done probably 15 to 20 years ago, so there's a lot of updated information, but it was the first time that scientists, whether they were believers or non-believers, were able to see what would happen in someone's brain and what was activated. And so to your point of science catching up, like that's something God's told us all along, but now we can see that. And it's a magnified reaction of what happens when we receive feedback in a earthly relationship. And I love that because it shows the significance and importance of calling out to God.
It's a dialogue.
It's a dialogue between God's creation, us as humans, and our Creator.
That's so good. And there's a difference, right, between worship and just singing. Because we can just be singing out of the joy, but when we worship, we're talking.
Mm-hmm. We're interacting.
It's a back and forth. Yeah, we're actually, and again, Paul says that in Colossians 3:16, sing with psalms or preach to one another, like admonish one another through singing. So it should actually be something that we do to one another. We should sing to another. Oh, it's true.
You were going to talk about this last point here too.
Getting excited. And yeah, I wanted to say.
Do you believe this?
Do I believe this? I do sometimes. And then other times, yeah, I need to be reminded that, yes, I know God is real, but God is so personal. God is so loving and caring. That passage in Exodus really brings that to the forefront when the people of Israel cried out and God heard and God knew. So not only did he just hear, he was moved into action by bringing his messenger Moses and delivering his people. We know that God knows our pain, therefore he sent his son into this world to live, die, rise again, and then promise us that he will return and restore all things. So he's amazing. And I think for me, I need to also remember that he answers. And sometimes it's not in the way that I want him to, or not in the way that I'm hoping he will. But that doesn't negate the fact that he's answering.
That word that you used a couple times there of remember, I think, is so crucial, because we can go along our day, our week, our month, our years, and forget to remember what God has done. And that's one of my favorite parts about the Israelites' story, is when they would remember what God had done, then it changed how they moved from there. And the same is true for us. When we remember what Jesus has done for us, when we remember ways in our lives that God was faithful, whether those are really large ways, and I also think the smaller ways are just as significant of, I didn't think that God was with me there. I didn't think that God would come through, and he did. Mm-hmm. I didn't believe God said, I'm his son or daughter of Christ, and now I see where I am and what he says about me. I think that's so powerful. And it also takes practice. And we have to do that consistently over time to get better and better at it.
Mm-hmm. I think there's so many biblical examples of that, where we see not only in the Old Testament, but New Testament scripture recalling the way that God worked in, you know, earlier in scripture. And so just even whether it's in our own lives, but even Jose, to your point, the value of going back to the Old Testament and seeing that he's the same God yesterday, today, and forever, and getting a chance to lean on that in times of crisis. Jose, I'll give you the final word as we continue. We kick off this series.
Give me the final song. I will sing dancing out of this
place.
You're
already practicing.
I'm ready to go. We should sing. We should worship. We should give it to God and believe that. I love what I'm getting away from this is that Yeah, worship is a dialogue. It's a conversation with God.
And it's so, a lifestyle that takes practice over time.
That's right. So let's be better worshipers this week.
Thanks for listening to the Conversations podcast. Be a part of the conversation by sending questions about the Sunday message directly from ccc.guide or by emailing conversations@cypresscreekchurch.com. See you back for the next conversation.